On this episode of Upcoming Attractions, we're talking full spoilers for Spider-Man No Way Home with our special guest, Russell, from See Through Screen. So stay tuned and let's talk all about it on Upcoming Attractions. G'day, gang. We are back for an exciting one. We're not talking about all the news. We're not talking about all the trailers. No, we are talking full spoilers for Spider-Man No Way Home. It came out literally this morning at midnight this morning. And I can't wait to talk about it with our special guest here today, Russell from See-Through Screen. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm good. I'm really happy to be here, man. How are you, dude?
I'm great, dude. So for those who don't know, introduce yourself and what you guys do.
Awesome. So I guess See-Through Screen originally started off as the name. It's kind of see a little bit past the screen, past the actual thing that you witness. There's always something a little bit more under the surface. So channel has been a bit dead, you know, as it is when it comes to people's passions. They go into peaks and troughs. But recently have just revived the channel a little bit, introduced some Pokemon into my mix, but I am looking back to bring in more things to do about films, movies, video games, all things media and storytelling. So that's what I'm about.
That's awesome, dude. And I'm just gonna say, I'm excited to have just to do something with you, because when we started our TikTok account, you were one of the first like random people that I had no idea who they were who found us. I'm not sure if it was you or your podcast. Is it Topical Punch? It's not Tropical. It's Topical right?
Punch.
Yeah, but Topical Punch.
Topical
podcast.
Punch. Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was the podcast or your account, but like they both came close together, and like I think like you were like within the first 10-15 followers, like. And
I remember this.
It was pretty early, and you commented on our you know, the little like what is the show, and you're like, I think you said something like, oh, I think I found something here. And you've been such a great supporter of the show through on the TikTok platform. You've been such a great commenter, and I've become a fan of your podcast and all your stuff. So this is really cool to like connect like this. So thanks, dude. This is awesome.
No, for sure. I think that was the first. I remember the moment when I actually either commented for the first time or followed you, because in this whole beginning process of me and my crew, you know, popping up our podcast, I'm very new to the media podcast in general, and I was like, you know what, something's missing. I watch a few things on YouTube. I get my interaction with the hobby elsewhere, but not from a podcast. But then I saw your clip one day, and I was like, you know what. Comment, follow, and I was like, go over to the podcast account, follow, comment. So, I mean, ever since then, it's really good. Not only the fact that I just adore the way you bring about your content, but also just the fact that you guys are Australian, just like me, and it's just an instant click. So,
legend. Yeah. Thanks, dude. Oh, that's got me all blushing and shit here.
It's getting hot.
it's pretty exciting, because like so a bit of background. I ran this show as a part of another show for like 3 years through another podcast called Midnight Double Feature, but it was audio only. And I always wanted to like, you know, I thought we should be doing videos, and I always wanted to do stuff on YouTube and stuff. And I was, you know, I wasn't really familiar with TikTok so much, but like, you know, you know, when you first get into it, you know, you think, oh, it's all just 12-year-olds twerking and stuff, you know? but we made the thing, and I found, oh, no, there's a huge community of dorks like me. And I'm just so glad I was, when we moved to start my own show as Upcoming Attractions, like the video stuff's been really taken off, and TikTok is such an awesome platform. I've met like other people. Like other podcasts, other people, like we'll be in each other's DMs and stuff. And it's really cool. It's a really awesome community there. And, I'm sure like, you know, we'll probably do more episodes later, and I'll probably meet other people.
100%.
It's fun, dude. It's fun. And speaking of fun, dude, Spider-Man No Way Home. So you saw the midnight screening, right?
Yeah, 12:10, so 10 minutes, the second session, that was out the time. Yeah,
where was that at? Midnight. Where was that at?
That was at Eastland, so it's just like a Hoyts. Hoyts.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're from Melbourne, right? Victoria?
Melbourne.
Yeah,
Melbourne, yeah. Victoria.
So
yeah.
I'm a Sydney kid. We saw it at, well, I missed out on tickets at the midnight, but I got at the 12:20 session. So it finished at like 3 a.m. I thought it was interesting. I noticed that there was a session at 11:45, which means they would have sat through like 15 minutes of ads and then it would have played at midnight. And it's like, oh, sneaky way to get it to see it first. That's cool. But look,
I've never felt so I've never felt so like, I like the ads, you know, you get to watch the trailers on the big screen and all that.
Yeah.
But just the anticipation, just sitting there, I'm like, is this movie going to start? Like,
have you been to many like midnight screenings, that sort of like fans of stuff before?
A few. And honestly, every time I've been to them, regardless of what the movie is, has been amazing. Now that I actually think about it, my two only ever midnight releases were Star Wars. It was The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker, actually, now that I think about it.
Right, yeah.
Nothing beats it. Like, regardless of how divisive a movie can be, it's like celebrating it with a crowd of people that actually care about the thing that you care about. Perfect.
Yeah, dude, like, I always tell people, especially with big franchise blockbusters, you need to see it the day it comes out or at least the weekend. But it's nothing better than being there with a bunch of hardcore fans. Like, during this, we were clapping. We were cheering. There were times, like, when characters would appear on screen and you wouldn't hear what they said because we were yelling so loud. It was such an awesome experience. And even mentioning Rise of Skywalker, sorry, not Rise of Skywalker, Last Jedi, I know it's a very divisive film, but let me tell you, like, when I saw that movie, the theater was over the moon. They were clapping, they were cheering. Like, the second when Rey and Kylo team up, it was like, this is the greatest moment in cinematic history. Like, I went out on Facebook Live telling everyone it's the best Star Wars ever. Now, like, with hindsight, without the hype, you know, I see its flaws, but you can't take away that moment for me, like, with the clapping and the cheering. I love it. And coming out of, like, lockdown and all that, it's I'm so glad we had a movie like this to celebrate, right?
Sure, you would agree that since Endgame, I really don't think, like, yes, we've had a few entries into Marvel and some big superhero movies, but compared to that kind of level of hype and celebration, No Way Home really came close to that level.
Oh, I feel like No Way Home I don't know. Okay, probably doesn't surpass Endgame in terms of hype, but in terms of my personal enjoyment, I definitely like this one more than Endgame. But we'll get into that. Let's kick things off. What we'll do is, for anyone listening who for some reason has accidentally left this on or whatever, we are recording this within less than 24 hours of the movie coming out. I haven't seen many opinions out there. So what we'll do, for about 10 minutes, we'll keep it spoiler free. We'll try. It's very hard to be spoiler free. But we'll do that and then we'll rip the bandaid off and kick into it. So dude, I'm going to just get you to just open up here. What are your general thoughts, about the whole movie, you know, and try not to spoil anything. But, you know, if you do, I'm not gonna put a gun to your head. It's all right.
look, I think the best way to surmise, like, at least the beginning of my thoughts, because of how all the leaks and just everything that's surrounding this movie, right? All the hype, even. There's a level of expectation that you just need to simmer down just a tad, right? I left after the movie was done, when the credits went black, I left with my expectations far superseded. Like, I knew it was going to be big. I knew it was going to be big. I knew it was going to be hype. But this was, it was almost to a point where it wasn't just a whole heap of fan service that gave me that hype. It was more walking away with I don't even have the words. I think I'm still comprehending it now, honestly.
I think, I was thinking earlier, and I think this really, maybe this is what you're trying to say, but like, the thing that surprised me the most, and maybe it shouldn't have surprised me, Disney scriptwriters are like 10 out of 10. They're legends. But what they really did well with this film is they had so much opportunity to just go, here's a bunch of fan service, call it a day. But no, like, every reference, every Easter egg, every character appearance, it felt organic to the story, and it was all grounded in real emotion. So the whole film, like, sure, you see this character here and that cameo and that Easter egg, like, and yeah, you get hyped, but at the end of the day, the story is really, really good. In fact, I would say one of my favorite Spider-Man cinematic stories I've seen, and one of the most emotional. Oh my god, I got teary at a few scenes.
I was at a point where, like, I was at that point, but I think because I was so already overwhelmed with everything that was happening, it's like, it was definitely a roller coaster, honestly.
Yeah, and I will say, I bring this up a lot, but, like, I am, and we can talk about this in more detail later, but I'm a real hater when it comes to the Venom movies, and seeing Let There Be Carnage put a bit of a bad taste in my mouth, but seeing this one, it's just like, oh, thank God. Like, it felt like a palate cleanser. It really restored my faith a little bit. I know it's different creative teams. I know it's different, you know, directors and writers. And I think, you know, Disney have a lot more attention to detail than Sony do. We'll get into that maybe another day. But I was just so grateful. I was so grateful that even like the first, say, 20 minutes of this film, they took their time with things. They set all these arcs up well. You'd think like, oh, it's starting right after No Way Home. That might create some issues. But if anything, it was more intense because you see Peter panicking and some things are played for comedy, but it was just so like well done. And yeah, do you have any more thoughts or comments before we get into spoilers? Because I find it really hard not to talk about a few things here.
Obviously. I guess my final thought before we really dive into the meat of things is just one word comes to me is relevant. They found a way to make everything relevant, not only to the character and to Peter and to Spider-Man, but to the overall narrative and where this leaves off. Into the unknown, whatever's going to happen from now on.
Oh boy, the unknown, I think, is a great way to describe the future of the MCU. So okay, I'm getting into spoilers. I'm ripping off the band-aid. This is your chance to go. 3, 2, 1. Oh my god, I got it!
Holy shit!
They did it! Not only are it's they like, all oh in my this. God. Not only are they all in this, but everyone feels three-dimensional and has done so well. So many things past my expectations. Holy crap. But let's talk about the main thing, right? Let's talk about three Spider-Men in the same room. What do you think? What are your thoughts? How do you feel about that?
I thought I was ready. I wasn't. I don't think I could. It was like drawing on all these emotions I've had growing up with all these different Spider-Men, and then just putting all of them together in this kind of delicious mixed Spider-Man soup. That's how I felt. Like, seeing them on screen together, it didn't feel like, when I say, yeah, of course I've been saying it for the last couple of minutes, like, you know, overwhelming. It's been the one of the other big words. But whenever they were on screen together, it felt like I could spend time, actually new time, with these Spider-Men that I've loved over the years. It's like, yeah. Wow.
It was
do you
like,
agree?
Oh yeah. Also, I just want to say Spider-Man soup. Yes, please. I would buy that. That's a good phrase. but yeah, dude, like, what I loved is whenever they would slow things down or literally pause the film, just let them shoot the shit. Like, oh, you fought an alien? That's cool. Oh, I was part of the Avengers. What's that, a band? Like, that's what I love. That's what Marvel nailed with the first Avengers so well, and they continued it, like, with other crossovers, is seeing how these two characters from completely different worlds would interact. Like, the first time Tony Stark and Captain America sort of disagreed, it was like, oh, okay. Or when, in Infinity War, this still gets me, I remember the moment when I realized, oh, Tony Stark and Doctor Strange aren't getting along. It's like, of course they wouldn't. They're both very arrogant people. Their personalities would clash. And so seeing the three Spider-Mans here, it was funny how, like, at times, like, it was a little bit awkward because they're all our personality a little bit awkward. And it was cool though. It was funny. And it kind of felt like catching up with old friends, you know? Like,
perfect.
there was some moments where you get to get a glimpse into where they've been. Like, there's a moment where Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man is like, you know, after Gwen passed away, I stopped pulling my punches. I got a bit darker. And I'm like, oh, okay. So that's Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man 3, which I never saw. Like, those little elements. And, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but did they imply that Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man and MJ, did they break up or something? Like, did they?
No, I think they stuck it out. I think they ended up having a stronger relationship after Spider-Man 3. So that particular moment that you're sharing was Tobey Spider-Man just sharing the fact that he got through and actually got to have at least a semblance of his normal life that he wanted. So,
oh, that's nice. It's nice to know that, you know, they're doing well now. And oh man, I know they're fictional characters, but I still love them.
No, I think what I really respect about what they did with the Spider-Man is that they didn't treat them like the villain. So the heroes got to have age. They have lived through their movies and, you know, they just got pulled into this dimension. So much so that in that same scene where Toby's giving that advice, did you pick up on the fact that, you know, Cole, are you seeing someone? Like, do you have an MJ in your life? And Andrew Spidey was kind of like, oh, it's complicated?
And
that feels like, to me, they're like, because remember, Mary Jane was supposed to be in Amazing Spider-Man 2, Shailene Woodley, and they cut that out, right?
Yeah, I think that was the case, yeah. It was also like, I feel like in the hands of lesser writers, he would have said, yeah, well, she died and it was sad. But like, they have that subtlety and, you know, while there is a bit of a reference, it's also like, you know, they did a really good job at making them feel like real people. And, you know, you might be there at home listening to this thinking, well, Matt, like, of course you're going to write the characters like they're real people. It's like, but that's a lot to ask from Hollywood these days, especially when they're doing crossovers and stuff. You know, you see characters, they pop up as Easter eggs, and they're there to serve a function, which is make you clap in the theater and that's it. But every character in this film, some of them was the best representation we've seen. Like, I was really surprised that they continued the continuity from the other films with the motivations of the villains. Like, when you first meet Electro and Sandman helps Spider-Man capture Electro, I was really surprised, because it's like, oh, like, that is true. His character's motivation based in that film, that is what he would have done. But I feel like in the hands of lesser writers, they would have went, and then Sandman punches him. The end, you know?
Well, so, was that something I love that. Was that something you were worried about, like, going in? Like, did you worry about that they were gonna retcon certain things and just make them straight up villains? Like,
I didn't think they would retcon, but what I did think they would do, and I'm so glad they didn't do this, is I did not expect them to make every villain feel like a character and three-dimensional. I was expecting that Sandman and the Lizard especially would only be CGI characters, probably not even do any dialogue. I expected them to show up for a fight and that's it. I did not think the villains would be there throughout. And like, even when like the Lizard started talking, as weird as it looked, like he was talking like as if he was still in the first movie. Like they really gave him, made him feel like he wasn't just a mustache twirling villain, you know? He had goals. They all had different goals and they had different things driving them. And I really did not expect that from this movie. I thought, oh yeah, they'll give a lot of screen time to Dr. Octopus and Green Goblin. But even the minor side villains had purpose. Like, each one had to be convinced in their own unique way to fight the Spider-Man. And when you look at like a lesser superhero movie, they'll go, oh, this bad person is bad and they have a superpower and they attack. But in this, it's like, well, no, they're trying to keep themselves alive. You know, Sandman doesn't really want to fight. Like, he's at first, he has to be convinced. And Electro, like, well, at first he's sort of like kind of chill, you know, the urge for electricity and power overcame him. And they all went on their own little journey, and I would not expect that from a movie where you sort of go and thinking like, oh, cool, Easter eggs. You know what I mean?
I think even more credit to the fact that this is What, and this is probably why it felt so much like a Spider-Man film, even with so much going on, is that at the center of it, this kind of story is the kind of story Spider-Man would experience. He has to face the dilemma of making a good decision with all the power that he has. And that's it is. That's it is.
100%.
Yeah, literally. I think that's what... It's surprising at the time, but now leaving the movie, the fact that he went on a very short, like, it was only a few scenes until they obviously chose to fight back against Peter. But in that moment, it's just like, whoa, is this like a romp with the villains and Spider-Man? Like, it's, to your point, to lesser writers or to a lesser movie, that would have been scrapped. It would have been straight to B plot, MacGuffin. Straight to the finale, but here felt a little bit different.
And yeah, like, I hate to keep bringing it up, but like, again, like, we just saw that in Venom. Like, you had that Shriek character, no explanation. She just was bad for the sake of it. And I don't know, like, again, I shouldn't be comparing those films, but oh man, like, I love that they took the time and they sat down and they thought that about everyone. And it even applies to, like, the side characters, like, you know, Ned and Matt. Oh my god, can we talk about May? Can we talk about May?
I had no words because part of me expected it. Part of me did. Like, a little tinge of me was kind of like, how are they going to continue Aunt May's character? Where does she fit in all in the future of Spider-Man? Right.
I had read a leak saying that she died, and it still surprised me. I thought it was fake. And this leak said, I'll tell you, this leak said the following. It had like a bullet point list. It said, Spider-Man's trying to help the villains. Dr. Octopus is helping them, but then Green Goblin betrays them. Didn't say how or why. And then May dies. And then in the last like half hour or something, all Spider-Man teamed up. I saw that. It was like on Reddit, but like, I didn't really put a lot of weight to it. Because, you know, there was no evidence, there's no whatever. But still, even knowing that going in or having a hint of that, everything surprised me, especially the May death.
But I think...
Oh my God, go on there.
Would you agree it was surprising because, lo and behold, that was our Peter's, you know, Tom Holland's Peter's Uncle Ben moment. It was an Aunt May.
That's what Marvel does... There. That's what Marvel has done so well with so many of these films. They know our expectations and they flip them. And for some reason, I don't know how they do it, but when they flip the expectations, for some reason, it means 10 times more. And like, I'll show you this. Literally the day before, I got a freaking Spider-Man tattoo.
And it says, oh my god!
The day before, dude, I was stoked. And it says, with great power, because great responsibility. And then they said it in the movie, and I'm like, oh my god! Like, I was freaking out. And then that builds up, it sets up the scene with Toby, and like, where he's just like, they say that with great power comes great responsibility again. And I'm just there like, this is my childhood, my everything. Oh my god, so good.
As you're saying that, you can't see it, but I'm getting actual goosebumps right now just talking about it, dude. That line, over time now, of course, it's such a classic cinema line. It's been used and parodied and whatever else for decades now. But as a kid, like, that mantra, you know, seeing this hero... Like, and
words to live by.
Yeah, let's just go with that. Yeah, literally. Words to tattoo on your shoulder.
Spider-Man, like, was such a good influence on me as a kid. I read so many comics, watched the 90s cartoon, everything, you know, loved all that stuff. But yeah, dude, like, to see it done in such a different way, and for somehow it made it even more emotional. I couldn't believe it. That they absolutely killed that scene. And like, at first, like, you think she's all right. So at one point I thought, oh, so she's going to die. Oh no, she's fine. And then like, they trick you out again. The problem is it's like the Batman problem, you know? Oh, they're going to kill his parents again. And we've seen it 100 times. And like, they found a way to do the Uncle Ben death, but in a completely different way. Oh my god, I love this movie so much. It was more meaningful
because we've had time with Uncle Ben in the sense. Like, we've had a couple of movies, Aunt May, her back and forth with Peter, and her accepting him as Spider-Man. Like, it's a different... It's the same result, so to speak, but how we've arrived there was... It was nuanced enough to be really emotionally engaging.
Yeah, and, like, so what they've done... One of the ways they've differentiated this series of Spider-Man from the others is... It's like a John Hughes coming of age story. It's very like that's been a lot of influence, and those like life lessons to live by is like kind of what makes those movies what they are. And by able to squeeze that into a movie like this about multiverses and whatnot, it was pretty incredible. Like really, like props to them. Should we talk about this movie by character? Like, should we talk about some of the characters and
for sure.
And no. Way? Let's start with, you kind of stole the show quite a bit. Green Goblin, Norman Osborn himself. What did you think of him beautiful. In this movie?
I think he was the most surprising part because I didn't realize how much of a critical role that he was going to play. Him, Dr. Octavius, like the real big hitter, villains of the last few Spider-Man movies, I was surprised how they treated the Green Goblin character. Allowing him to do the whole deceiving thing, like the whole like, oh, I'm Dr. Hart, like just to go undercover like that up to the last moment. Like as soon as he said like, oh, there's only going to be one of you, or whatever he said just before he kind of like showed himself, immaculate to the point where as he gets to the building where Tom Holland's having the Spidey sense, he can't figure out where the danger is. Oh,
yeah,
perfect.
And when you think about it, like they, in a way, they've kind of done that before with Mysterio, just in a different way. You know, they kind of made him look like an ally, and they had the twist. But oh, I think they did it even like the way they pulled it off. The execution was incredible, and that scene where he's like he knows something's wrong, but he's trying to figure out what it is. Oh, one of the best scenes in this franchise. So well done. And that fight that follows where Osborn is just smashing him through the floor, through the walls, like such, like the stakes were felt so high. It was incredible. And what surprised me actually, and if you told this to me, a younger me, that younger me might have been disappointed, but seeing the movie now, like obviously it's amazing, but like Norman's way of fighting is different to how it was in the first movie. Like he's less pumpkin bombs, less glider. He's more about like brute physical strength. And I forgot that about the character. I forgot how strong 100%. He is, but it's so well done. And shout outs to, Willem Dafoe. What a performance, right? Like, what
he does not. He did not cash in that paycheck. He gave it. He brought it back. He brought back that character 100%.
He not only brought him back, but like he, I think the material he had this time around is a little bit more three dimensional. Like obviously the original's a classic, and you gotta love it for what it is. But I think Sam Raimi was kind of going, you know, because he had to sort of like reinvent the wheel a little bit. He was going for a bit more cartoony. And you know, that voice is still cartoony, but he had more layers to him to work with this time around. And to see that like evolution was so awesome.
And they kept best part of the characters, which is his lines, the lines that were written for Willem Dafoe, quotable, meaningful. Punchy, like, yes.
He got to chew the scenery as well. He did such a great job. Like, it's, oh my god, that alone would have been enough to make this an incredible film. But we have so many others. But first, like, did your cinema have a massive laugh from the I'm something of a scientist myself.
We clapped, dude. As soon as he said that, yeah. Like, thank you.
there was another meme reference. I didn't pick up on it. I don't know if my cinema did, but my mate did. There's a point where I think it's Ned. He's like, He's like, oh, Peter Parker. And all three of them are like, oh, what, me? And they start pointing to each other. I think that's a reference to that old meme with the from the cartoon. Yeah, I didn't realize that was a reference. But yeah, that's funny. I think if I was to rewatch it now, and I'm probably going to rewatch it the next day or two, I would pick up on even more things. But look, another like high build villain right next to Green Goblin. Dr. Octopus, what do you think of him in this film?
What they do with his character is kind of why I've enjoyed the other villains as well. They did not retcon. They kept that. So I'm pretty sure all of them were brought into this MCU at the point they were about to die, I'm pretty sure, or about to whatever. So just at that brink, they were brought back. So with Dr. Octavius, we get him just before he gains control back of his arms.
Yeah.
So what I enjoyed about his character in this film is that they kept that. They took like one step back in his narrative development in order to have that serve a different purpose in this film. And it didn't feel like a disservice. We felt like we got more Alfred Molina as a good Dr. Octavius rather than just an ending scene of Spider-Man 2, which, great, fantastic, that's how it ends. But to get a continuation of this Dr. Octavius that would have helped Peter, beautiful.
One of the interesting things with his character has always been, and not just in the movies, but in other mediums too, it's like the almost like mentor-like relationship with Peter. Like, have you played the PS4 game?
Yes, I have.
Like in that, I remember playing it, and like for the first like three quarters, I was like, am I not going to fight Dr. Octopus? Is he just going to be a mentor character who's going to be the bad guy next one? And then eventually get the turn. But like, I even love seeing that relationship there. And in this one, like, yeah, they've got to earn each other's trust and stuff a little bit. But I love that. And seeing Dr. Octopus interact with Green Goblin on screen, who have never interacted before, but they're so iconic. It was amazing to see them like talk to each other, and I love those scenes. Even seeing stuff like, you know, the lizard talk to Electro, or the fact that I have this familiarity with each other, it's just like, fuck, give me a Sinister Six movie. I want to see these guys hang out together more.
Well, who knows, cool. in the future of things. I mean, I'm sure we'll touch on that a little bit later, but it does leave the door open for so much in the coming years. So,
well, I get, hey, maybe that's what they are setting up. Maybe like they've cured them, they've saved them, so they are usable, I guess. That would be really cool. I know back in the Amazing Spider-Man days, they really wanted to do a Sinister Six movie. Just, you know, one of the many problems with Amazing Spider-Man 2 is they spend half of it trying to set up a sequel that never happens. But, you know, I think it's definitely on the cards for Sony. Let's speed through the rest of the villains so we can get into like the meat and potatoes, like Spider-Man and Doctor Strange and all that. I'll go through them. Electro, what do you think, Electro?
Felt more like Jamie Foxx. Like Jamie Foxx got to really put himself much more into the character. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't say as far as he just became automatically more three-dimensional, but at least he had more time to, chew the scenery. What do you think?
Look, his performance in Amazing Spider-Man 2 is pretty cringy. I'm not going to lie. I feel like if you took him out of the film, it would be actually great. And I should also say, that's my favorite Spider-Man suit we've seen yet. So I'm glad they chose the second one for this movie for Andrew. But he is a great actor, and he's always been really funny. And so I love that they were like, I think to bring him on, they're like, look, you don't have to play the same version. You can be a bit cooler. We won't give you a comb over. You can be a bit charming this time around. But they still stayed true. His motivations, he still felt all that. And in the second movie, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, he was motivated by, he wanted to be seen. He wanted to be all that. And so now that he's in this world, and he's quote unquote cooler, I think that makes him want to be like that. So I think that's really well done. 100%. I also just love his outfit in this one. It's way more true to the comics. It's more similar to the Electro I grew up with. So, and they, without being cheesy, which must have been hard. Like, I still can't believe they made Mysterio not look dumb.
Yeah,
they got good costume designers over there. Real quick, I guess the lizard, and maybe Sandman. Maybe we can do a 2-for-1.
Yeah,
now.
For sure. I think that you're 100% right. They can be a 2-for-1 because, end of the day, someone's got to be the bench warmers. Yeah. Not to say that
the cannon fodder.
They're cannon fodder. Look, I think for the lines they had and the interactions they had, it was enough. And I think leaving it at that to then focus on the bigger villains that mattered to the other Spider-Man. Fine. Perfectly serviceable. I can't really complain. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm the same. Like, I was honestly just surprised that for both of them, they had scenes with the original actors. Like, I really thought they would cheap out there. Like, that's where they'd cut costs. Like, but... Oh, we see so little of the guy who plays Lizard, though. It makes me wonder, like, is this, like, stock footage or something? Or he just showed up for 10 minutes, or...
No, I 100% thought they did that. No. So when they cured Sandman and, the lizard. Just go over that.
Yeah.
There was a moment when I was like, "This feels very familiar." I don't know whether it's on purposely familiar, because I don't know. I'll probably find out when it comes to like behind the scene footage and whatnot. But
yeah, I feel like this ties into like one of my complaints. I do not have many complaints. In fact, maybe I've only got really one, and it's kind of like a beggars can't be choosers, Matt. Like, this is really nitpicky, but I feel like there's a little bit too much green screen in this. Like, it felt like, so as a video editor, I feel like I can pick this out sometimes, but like, I can tell that these actors weren't on the same set together. They dragged and dropped, copy and pasted. And there was a few shots where it's like, it felt a little bit more obvious than it usually would. But I think that's part of the problem. Like, they worked so hard to keep this in secret. They probably couldn't have everybody all together, and like, it's still really well done. But I noticed the green screen in this a little bit more than I usually do in a Marvel movie. But
fair enough.
I said, that's such a minor nitpick. What do you think of Doctor Strange in this one?
I'm glad they didn't do, not yet anyway, but they didn't do evil Doctor Strange, because that was one of the theories floating around. Like, what if he's doing this on purpose? This is not the real Doctor Strange. I'm glad that he still got to be a continuation of his character. It was just him being Doctor Strange. You know, this being part of this installment, this kind of like comic book crossover. It really did feel like, I love what they're doing now, and just overall with the MCU, especially the last couple of movies and some sort of TV shows, characters get to be part of other characters' narratives without like overtaking or just being like one dimensional and just kind of throwaway things. They're actually going to be part of the building narrative. So overall, I'm pretty pleased with Doctor Strange. If anything, it makes me quite excited for number two, because like Benedict's, his range, he's an immaculate actor, and that's probably the reasons why we love him as Doctor Strange anyhow. So yeah, very keen to see him Doctor Strange too.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's great. I take it. So you've seen What If, then I take it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So seeing that little trailer at the end and seeing like evil Doctor Strange from What If in live action, pretty amazing. We also saw, I know how familiar you are with, I think it's pronounced Shigagorath.
Yeah.
Seeing him in the trailer too, that was pretty badass. But yeah, in this movie, like, I loved how, I always said this to myself. It's like, there's no way he'll be a major presence throughout the whole film. He'll come in, he'll cause the problem, he'll go away somehow, and he'll come back. But seeing him fight Spider-Man was pretty awesome, I'm not going to lie. And you get some moments where it's like, it's like, we've saved the world together, but I forget sometimes you're still a kid. And as an adult, like, God, adult, I use that loosely. Man-child is probably more accurate, but as a grown-up, sort of like seeing how, like, he's talking to him, he's like, you're a kid, I've got to remember that, I'm responsible for you in this scenario. It makes sense, right? It's an interesting, again, play of that dynamic they've got, which I thought was really, really cool. What I love about the Doctor Strange character is he's only had one movie, but he's appeared in so many crossovers and things.
Exactly.
We've seen him develop so much. And in the first one, like, he could barely do any spells, but Infinity War and Endgame and and Ragnarok and What If and now this. Like, he's leveled up so much. But what I also love about the Marvel movies is the little, like, where are they now moments. Like, we found out in this one that he is no longer Sorcerer Supreme because he was blipped for 5 years. And Wong's Sorcerer Supreme. What?
And it raises so many questions, honestly.
Yeah, it makes me think, okay, so Wong was in Shang-Chi doing these little schemes and stuff. Is he doing that while he's Sorcerer Supreme? Is it, like, how does that affect his relationship with Wong? Like, he was trying to hide the fact that he did the spell from Wong. So is Wong, like, I guess Wong's his superior, but, like, how does that affect their dynamic? So many possibilities. So exciting.
Their relationship feels, like, just a quick end note. Like, yeah. When they had their first interaction, they felt like the dynamic was still there, but just something was a little bit different.
Yeah. No, I felt the same thing, dude. There was a reference, I don't know if you caught it, but I thought it was so interesting. Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man talking to Ned Leeds, and he's like, Ned's like, oh, so do you have a best friend? He's like, yeah, well, my best friend tried to kill me. And then, like, he's all like, I promise I'll never become a villain, try and kill you. And, like, you know, and any fan is like, he's Hobgoblin in the comics.
He's Hobgoblin, like, exactly.
And that's what Marvel does really well. It's like, you go, is this an Easter egg or is this setting up the sequel? And I think at all times, like, Kevin Feige's just like, just throw it out there, see what people get excited about. You never know. I want to say, the big thing I want to say is about this. If any takeaway from this is the most Spider-Man, a Tom Holland Spider-Man film has felt ever. I think you touched on it before, dude, when you were saying, I forget your exact words, but basically you're saying what I'm saying. He's more Spider-Man. He's dealing with those Spider-Man type problems. He's like trying to do the right thing. It's, I feel like something in Tom's performance, like he's acting more Spider-Man-like. I can't explain it, but
there's something about, like, because you said it earlier. These are coming of age films, and somehow, even in this third film with Dimensions and this and that, it still ties off this trilogy of a coming of age trilogy. And that's why this movie in particular works really well, because as the end suggests and as we're moving forward with Spider-Man, we are getting Spider-Man that we know and love. This familiar tone, him going out to eventually probably the Daily Bugle.
Yeah.
He's paying rent.
Yeah, but like, by the end of the film, he's moved out of his mum's or aunt's house. He's got his own apartment. And he's Spider Boy is now Spider Man.
Man, 100%.
So they really captured that well. Is it just me, or does it feel like the apartment he moved into looks an awful lot familiar to Venom and Eddie Brock's apartment?
Really?
Is it just me? Like, I think it's still meant to be New York, but I was looking at it and it's like, it's maybe it's a coincidence. It's an apartment,
I'm thinking this is a very apartment looking apartment.
It might be an America thing. It might be an American thing, but I was half expecting him to pop out. But then we get to the freaking post credit scene, and it's funny. I read an article somewhere where Tom Hardy said that the post credit scene for Venom, which I was always like, they use stock footage from No Way Home. It doesn't seem like Disney are very passionate about this. They shot it on the set of No Way Home. The post credit scene for Venom, they shot it on the set of No Way Home. And I was always thinking, like, that's weird. Why would they bring him out? And it makes sense now. And in the post credit scene here, he's also in Hawaii or wherever it is. They probably shot them both back to back. I love what they did, because they were able to, you know, make Sony happy. They got Venom to have a cameo. And actually, I do think it was pretty funny. Like, where he's like, aliens don't want stones. They want to eat people's brains. I'll admit, I give him shit, but I did chuckle at that. But like, it was a part of me so happy when he disappeared. I'm like, oh, good. I don't want to see this version of Venom.
100%.
I don't want to see this version of Venom crossover with Spider-Man. But they left a little bit behind, so What does that mean? Will it get on someone else? Will we get a new casting for Venom for another Spider-Man sequel? Will it, maybe they can also bring back Tom Hardy, but it's like a, this universe's Tom Hardy. I love that Disney have found a way around it where they can still have the character, still say it's within the multiverse, but now they can do the Disney take on it, which, or the Marvel take on it, which I think would probably be a lot better.
100%. If anything, Let There Be Carnage, because, yeah, I'm with you. I walked away, like, you know, the first movie had its problems, and we can spend a whole another hour talking about it, all right? Sure. But the second one, it's just kind of like, cool, there was some enjoyment, but I walked away genuinely disappointed. I was like, this is Carnage. This is Venom. These are iconic characters. And I'm like, as soon as I saw that post-credit scene, I was like, cool, like, yeah, hey, fun. But I agree with you. When he left at the end of this movie, I was like, okay, cool. We're not doing that. We're not doing some weird, like, Eddie Brock's now just going to be, like, straight up with Venom. Like, that makes no sense for the Spider-Man mythos and his black suit and all that. So,
yeah. And it's hard to imagine Venom being a bad guy and intimidating when he's always like, shut up, you. Oh, it's bad guy's brain. It's been, you know, it's hard to imagine that being intimidating, but I think they were smart. You know, that's the way that the Venom symbiote gets in this world. And look, maybe I know Sony said there's another three Spider-Man films, but Tom Holland doesn't seem to be. I know. I feel like we're getting mixed messages. He doesn't seem to be fully on board with that. Like you said, there was a quote where he said, I shouldn't be doing Spider-Man when I'm 30. So I don't know what's happening there.
I can address that. I think I heard him like explore that quote a little bit more. And I think once you hear the explanation, it does make more sense. I agree. It did give me a bit of worries. I was like, oh, is he already tapping out now already? But the way he explained it is that if he's playing it for another, you know, 10, 12 years, however old he is, he's going to be doing something wrong. Because at that point, he wants to be able to leave the character in a space that you can bring in Miles Morales or bring in a different Spider-Man. That's where he was coming from. Like, of course, who wouldn't want to be playing like Iron Man for 10 years? Of course.
Yeah.
But at some point, you've got to make way for those different stories and different characters. And yes, we can bring in the more nihilistic approaches to contracts and money. And if you love the character as much as what seems like, say, Andrew Garfield or Tom Holland does, there's an element of truth to that quote.
100%. And which I think is the quote of today, 100%. 100%. I think, I hope he continues. I do think he's doing a good job. Like, he sort of has evolved a little bit in a really good way. I mean that too. But yeah, like, for all we know, maybe they won't chase up that lead about Venom. People forget, like, the end of Incredible Hulk, they set up the leader as a villain, and he hasn't still popped up. So anything's possible, really. Look, we're almost out of time, so I just want to bring up a few more things real quick. I really loved both Zendaya and Jon Favreau's characters had their emotional moments as well. This is the best performance I've ever seen from Zendaya.
Hands 100%. Down. 100%. Like,
I've never listened to her music, so I don't know about how she got a fan base there. Love Dune, but she had like 3 minutes of screen time. and so I haven't really seen her really act, because all the other roles I think of she's done, it's mostly singing. And it's like, I'm seeing her in this and I'm like, oh, I get it now. Like, I get why people love Zendaya so much. Like, she's always done well playing the awkward type in these movies, but those romance scenes, the way that they built this film around the relationship between Peter and MJ, I think that's why it felt more like a Spider-Man film. They brought 100%. Back that element to it, and it makes me so happy to see that.
Dude, just gives me goosebumps just thinking about it again. Like, and what's the most wonderful thing? We are nerds. We love being nerds, right? But like, I think that's the most wonderful thing about where the movie leaves all the characters now, because now it's like. What's the best analogy? The chessboard is cleared. Like, we almost do get in some ways like a soft reboot as such, but not in a way that does tarnish all the things that Holland has been through over the last couple of movies and being an Avenger and stuff. So yeah, I'm keen to see, like, that. I think that leads into my next question. Where do you think, or what do you hope to see for the future of Spider-Man?
Okay, the question is not for the future of MCU, it's for future of Spider-Man. You said. So Okay, first of all, I'd like to see the Sony-verse movies be their own separate thing, and I like to see them grow, and hopefully they can make something interesting. Because again, I think the tone doesn't mesh with what Disney are doing. I would like to see for a new trilogy, if they keep going with Tom Holland, the vibe I got, what they're trying to do is like, it's a fresh slate. So I like the idea of new supporting characters. So if we don't have Ned and we don't have Zendaya, maybe does he meet Gwen? Does he meet another love interest? I want them to try and keep being a bit traditional. So seeing that new suit at the end, where it's more blue and red, which is really cool. And yeah. I did not expect that at all. I'd like them to become more Spider-Man-y, more classic Spider-Man. Cause the last two we got didn't feel classic Spider-Man. They were good, but this one felt a bit more like classic Spider-Man. But yeah, I don't really know where I like them to go. I really, really want to see Scorpion done. We still haven't seen Scorpion on screen. I don't know how Kraven would work, but I know that they have talked about it. I think Scorpion's probably my next character I would really like to see. I'd love to see the Rhino done properly. Mm-hmm. You could do... Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't really know. I know my all-time dream film, which I think we'll never get, is I want to see them adapt the comic Maximum Carnage. That is my favorite Spider-Man run. And I think you could do that in the MCU because it's like basically a team-up movie, right? A team-up thing. So, but to do that right, you would need a good Venom. You would need a good Carnage. And with what we have at the moment, it would take a lot of rewriting and I wouldn't want them to jump straight into it. I'd want them to set 100%. It up. Like 100%. Treat Maximum Carnage the way that MCU treated Avengers. So you build up to it. You build the other characters. But outside of that, I really don't know what I wouldn't mind seeing a new director. I will say, I think John Watts, this is his best directing I've seen him do. The scene where they find out that, everybody knows his identity. It's a single take, one long shot via handheld. You know the one I'm talking about. And he's closing the windows and stuff. It's amazing how they made a scene like that feel so tense. I don't think I know what I want. All I know is I don't want them to milk him too hard. I don't care if he doesn't cross over the Avengers too much because Spider-Man is such a great character with a great rogues gallery. You can do stuff. I would like to see Ned Leeds become Hobgoblin though. That would be cool.
Okay, fair enough.
Would be cool. But yeah, outside of that, I'm not really sure what I want. What do you want to see happen with if there's another trilogy, what would you want to see from Spider-Man?
I think I'm very much aligned with you, but I think where you are is the angle, and I agree. I have a kind of love for Spider-Man 3, Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man 3.
Okay.
I think that movie came at a point where seeing Spider-Man take in evil, take in his rage, live his selfishness and him coming out of that, really important as a teenager, like a lesson learnt kind of thing. And that was one of the better parts of that movie. And now that we have that symbiote Easter egg and who knows what's going to happen, but I want the future of Spider-Man to eventually and earn that black suit, to earn those moments to... I don't know how... I'm not a great script writer. I can't tell you what that story is going to be. But that moment where he gets that symbiote full black suit... Firstly, it's cool as shit. So, of course, I want to see that. But just to see that then eventually lead to Venom and lead to Khan. To see the characters that I personally really love come to life properly as opposed to let there be carnage. That's exactly what I want.
Yeah, I'm actually really happy that most of the villains that I grew up loving have been represented fairly well on screen. I think Rhino's the only one I haven't and Scorpion are the only ones I haven't seen done really well yet. But it could happen. I think the other obvious answer is Miles Morales. I think they'll do it eventually, but like at this point in time, I'm happy with Spider-Verse because that movie was amazing and the sequel looks amazing too. And yeah, look, I think we're just about out of time here. Do you have any other final, do you have any other final thoughts, comments, feelings, anything we missed that we didn't touch on with this film?
I feel there is so much we're going to, like you said, we're going to probably both watch this again in the next couple days to weeks or whenever we have time as adults. But I think the last final thing I kind of want to leave this on is just when that moment where the worlds are splitting apart, you know, and Doctor Strange has the option of letting it, but just him trying to refix the spell. But the only way to do it is for everyone to forget Peter Parker. I love how that's the tie through of the movie. The whole thing was like, oh, forget that Peter Parker was Spider-Man, like, you know, to remove that identity. But instead, it's now Peter himself, him and Spider-Man. It's one of the same. So it's almost like the end of the movie on a on the flip side of the coin. I think that leaves Peter in a really, really good position to see where he takes this whole back and forth between him and his identity, him accepting him as a Spider-Man. Like, it leaves a lot of room for growth whilst actually really growing up the character. So,
so how do I do that?
Oh, yeah.
How did they do that? They did two for one in one. It's amazing they were able to pull that off.
Yeah, exactly. So massive props to, honestly, I really, like, no one, I don't know who's going to hear this. If anyone who hears this, there's worked in this film, massive props to you guys. What a wonderful work of art, honestly. So well done. Bravo.
Fantastic job. I just remembered one more thing I'm going to ask you before we go. First of all, are you up to date in Hawkeye?
Yes, I am. This morning with 3 or 4 hours sleep, I was like, put on Hawkeye. I want to watch the next episode.
I watched it just before seeing the movie, like just before. And we saw the slight spoilers for the last 5 seconds of Hawkeye episode 5, but they had Vincent D'Onofrio return as Kingpin. And I had heard a leak that Matt Murdock would be in this, with Charlie Cox. Did you hear that leak? Did you know that going in?
I heard like talks. I heard every talk under the sun at that point, but like, when the cane what is real? Drops,
yes. Yeah. And so I don't know how they're going to do it. Will they do a Netflix season 4? Will they, of Daredevil? I don't know what. But I was really excited because I don't know if you remember this. But back in the day, in the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they were really connected to the MCU. And like the day Captain America Winter Soldier happened and the S.H.I.E.L.D. went down, S.H.I.E.L.D. had an episode where it took place at the same time, and like the show affected the movie and the movie affected the show. And I know this isn't the same, but it was very similar, and just seeing like that's how they bring in Daredevil to the MCU, very exciting. And seeing him catch that brick, amazing.
I'm a very good lawyer. Oh my, yeah, it's so good.
So good. So good. Oh, I could talk about this forever, but we got to move on. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today at Upcoming Attractions. And our special guest, Russell from See Through Screen and Topical Punch Podcast. Dude, if people want to check you out, where can they find you?
Awesome. So in terms of See Through Screen, I am mostly here on TikTok, just under the name, all full letters, all this lowercase. And by real See Through Screen on Instagram. You can find Topical Punch Podcast by that name from both TikTok and Instagram as well.
Cool. And I know See Through Screen at the moment, a lot of Pokemon content, but I've seen you get into movies. I saw your review for Dune and a few other cool stuff. So keep it up, man.
Thank you.
You're doing good stuff, bro. Anyways, that's it for us today here at Upcoming Attractions. If you want to check it out, as always, you can watch the video version on YouTube, or you can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever your favorite podcasts are. You can also see our highlights and all the best moments on TikTok, Instagram, you name it. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. We love you so, so much. And if you want to help support the show, please, please, please consider giving us a 5-star review on iTunes. Wow, that's probably the first time I said all that and I didn't trip over myself. Good for me. I'm learning. I'm learning, Russell. All right, that's it for us today. I'm Matt. That's Russell. And we'll see you next time. Laters.
Bye.